Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, I know we've done a lot of NBA. You know, some of that just has to do with this Dwight Howard stuff, getting a chance to connect with him today. A lot of local reporters had that opportunity. Lakers practice facility, as Ramona Shelburne reported, will be open tomorrow. We'll see how the Lakers use that. Stringent rules that are obviously enforced in the state of California, Los Angeles. So we'll see how these training facilities that are trickling open across the country for some of these NBA teams, how that could be a strong, strong first step. One of the things I did a little bit earlier as well, Chris Paul, who's representing the Players Association, was on Get Up, and he talked about how bad he wants to play and how bad the players want to play. Dwight shared a very similar sentiment, and I think, look, you've heard Jared Dudley on Twitter, LeBron James on social media. A lot of these players want to make it happen, where I feel like with baseball, it's been a little bit different. And I'm not – when I say with baseball it's a little different, I'm not trying to knock these baseball players, because the reality is if they don't feel comfortable playing, then they shouldn't play. And I think that's going to be a theme for everyone. I mean, anyone who's asked to go back to work, I guarantee you, if you are not comfortable with going back to work, you're going to have that option from continuing to work at home. But for obviously these athletes, it's a different predicament, different situation. If baseball is going to have baseball again this season, if they're going to play out this 2020 season, you're going to be playing it out with a lot of question marks, an incredible amount of question marks. And you're not going to know what tomorrow holds. And you're not going to know if somebody does test positive. What exactly, you could have a blueprint or, you know, in pencil of what you think you should be doing, how it should be done, why it should be done. But the reality is nobody knows what tomorrow is going to hold. So a lot of question marks for a lot of these athletes. And I have no problem at all if any of them say, I'm just not comfortable with playing baseball this year. Or, you know what, this NBA season, I'm going to have to pass. Now, I don't know how many athletes are going to actually do that. That's why you have this players union, and that's why you have these leagues with the head of the commissioners. But we'll see. I think we're literally going to be finding out over the next 2 to 4 weeks or so. Okay, so this was this not a story? I'm going to set it up, and I'm going to let Jeremy Lin tell the story. Inside the Green Room, which is with Danny Green. And it's a podcast that he does. When you think of Kobe Bryant and you think some of the stories around Kobe and you think how bad Kobe Bryant wanted to win, whether it was in practice, whether it was obviously the games, just how competitive he was in these playoff matchups, doing everything he can every single game, every single year to try and bring championships to Los Angeles and for the Los Angeles Lakers. Well, there was also a phase of his career where the Lakers were losing. And that was, if you actually look at Kobe's career, start of his career, it took a few years for the Lakers. Once they got Phil Jackson, Del Harris was out of there. The Lakers learned how to win, and Shaq started dominating the league. And then they go through a phase where they don't win for maybe it was 2 years or so, something along those lines, before Powell eventually came, and now you're competing again for the next 4 years. And then obviously we go through a phase where the Lakers don't make the playoffs for a number of years, and Kobe's a part of that mix. Jeremy Lin, I know everybody remembers, at some point was a part of this Los Angeles Lakers franchise. He tells a story about Kobe Bryant on Inside the Green Room.
I remember at this time he had gotten hurt and he was out for the season, and so he wasn't around for quite some time, just rehabbing and being away from the team and stuff. And then all of a sudden, after, like, you know, we hadn't seen him in like a few weeks, and all of a sudden he walks in the gym, and this is the day before the trade deadline, and we're all about to start practice. We're on the baseline, we're stretching, doing our dynamic warm-up or whatever, and then he comes in, sweatsuits, he has a sling around his, you know, for his hurt shoulder, and he has his shades on, his Kobe shades. And he walks in, and everyone's like, oh, and Carlos Boozer's like, Kobe, like, good to see you, bro. Like, dang, like, we haven't seen you in a bit. How come you came today? And he was just stone-faced, and he was like, I just came by to say bye to some of you bums who are going to get traded tomorrow. and then he sits down at the table with the school, you know, where you control the scoreboard at the practice facility, and he said a couple words to the coach, and then he left. And then I remember one of my teammates was just like, I lost all motivation to practice.
Cold-blooded. But that's what you think of when you think of Kobe. You know, all this guy wanted to do was win. It makes me actually think of if Michael Jordan was his idol, and it's obvious Michael Jordan was his idol, and we got a chance, this is the perfect time for us to see this Last Dance documentary. The last two episodes, what was it? It was Kobe sitting there, or I'm sorry, it was Michael Jordan sitting there and saying, if you don't want to win like I do, let's not even have the conversation. I had to raise you to my level. When I came here to Chicago, there was nothing at the United Center. Nothing was going on in Chicago basketball related. I brought somebody on, I think it was early in the week, maybe Monday or Tuesday, that just talked about the finances, what happened financially around Michael Jordan once he stepped foot in Chicago and then obviously started his run and his popularity and everything else. Jordan said this on that. He said this on, it might have been the first episode where they talked about the Nike deal that he had. He said, I'd be nothing. I would be selling no shoes if I was averaging 2 points a game. So Michael Jordan had the standard, and that standard was there throughout his career, and that's what made him so special. If Kobe Bryant looks at Michael Jordan as his idol, if we say Kobe Bryant is the closest thing to Michael Jordan, the almost a mirror of just their body language, their mannerisms, how they approach the game, their work ethic, their grind, all the stuff. If we say all that, what do you expect from Kobe Bryant? What do you expect from Kobe? So when I hear Jeremy Lin tell that story, that Kobe Bryant walks in, he's out for the season, his left shoulder in a brace or a sling, I think he mentioned, walks into the training facility, looks at all these players at a time where the Lakers obviously weren't winning any games in playoffs. They weren't making any runs at the playoffs. And he looks at all these players. Hey, how you doing? Why'd you come today? I came to say bye to all those that are going to be traded after tomorrow's trade deadline. How cold-blooded is that, and how OG is that? You know, when you really think about it and you think of Kobe, you think of him as this old school player in a you know, current generation where he looked at everybody else and is like, you guys literally are on a completely different level. You are so far below me. I don't know how to explain it. I mention this on the show all the time, that when I do the pregame show with Michael Thompson, when Michael says, when I say, okay, this player is out with a bruised right shoulder, or this player has a sore knee, he looks at me every time and says, what do you think Kobe would do? You think Kobe would play? Of course Kobe would have played. But right when I heard that, Jesse said to me, you got to take a listen to this. And you know, obviously taking a listen to that, I'm like, I could go on that for 5, 10, 30 minutes if I need to, just to explain Kobe Bryant. BJ Armstrong, by the way, with USA Today's Mackenzie Salmon. I want to play this because this is another one where you just got players that are on different levels. You just got players that their mentality is just different. So there's obviously a lot of similarities when we talk Kobe and MJ. Here's MJ only respecting players like him.
When you play against him, you know, he only respects the other players who are trying to win just like him. What I was trying to do for my team, for our team, was establish, okay, now you're in for a fight. And he made the adjustment. And he made it, they made a great adjustment in game three, which carried out through the rest of the series that we ended up adjusted to as a team. And that's where they were able to win. But, you know, that's why they were the champions, because they were that good as a group.
You know, one of the things I love most about this documentary with Michael, I love how he makes up stories in his own head to just motivate himself, just finds ways to motivate himself. Clyde Drexler's on whose level? He's on my level. Cool. I'm going to tell Magic. I'm going to go at him all of this game one, see what happens. That's when Jordan had 6 threes in the first half. He found ways to motivate himself. That's what the greats do. But that clip by Jeremy Lin and then BJ Armstrong, just kind of a quick reminder that the greats find ways to motivate themselves. Jordan and Kobe were absolutely no different. Halftime coming up next. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Jesse, how are you doing, my friend?
You know what? I was here the whole week.
What day did you come in?
I was Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, Tuesday. That's right. You did the whole week.
We'll get Curtis back probably next week. I told Curtis to stay home. He hit me up, and I was like, you know what, Curtis? You take the extra day.
Yeah.
There's no reason you to come back on a Friday. I think that's kind of one of the most pointless things, to be honest with you. But stay home. Take the extra day. Feel better. I'll knock this one last day of the week.
I'm telling you, Jess, that's not – you know, we've talked about this with Funches at times because for Lakers talk, Funches is in there. He's producing and he's sitting on the board. That's just the circumstances that we're in. And then you doing this week, Tuesday through Friday, that's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in the background. Okay, I'll ask you this. What's been the most challenging thing to do running both at the same time? What's the toughest thing to do?
You know what? It's not even running both at the same time. That's the challenge. It's kind of everything leading up to this just because I had to make sure, you know, I got everything good with you. I got to make sure I got all the sound ready to go. I got to make sure it's all loaded and the air. So it's basically everything leading up to this.
Prep.
Yeah, it's all the prep. Once I'm here, it's good.
Are
unless something goes
now?
Crazy.
Last 1 hour left. Is this
we're good. It's weird because it's, you know, it's Friday. I'm ready. And to be honest, everything's like, all right. You know, I was kind of flustered in the morning and throughout the day. But, you know, as soon as I got here, everything kind of unrolled nicely. And I'm rolling. I'm ready. We got an hour left. I'm ready for the weekend.
I'm with you.
Me and my girlfriend are going to celebrate her birthday.
What are you guys going to do?
We're going to try to go out to the Poppy Fields out in Lancaster.
Okay.
So we're going to try to do that, and we're just going to see what happens just on the way back. We're just going to have
wear your mask. Social distancing. Definitely. Find a restaurant. Go on Yelp. See maybe if there's a good restaurant you guys can pick up some food from.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Food is a big component.
Well, we were doing this yesterday. Remember we were talking about doing some road trip type of stuff? Man, I'm with you. I got a friend of mine. She lives in Utah. She lives out here, but she's from Utah. And she told me she went out to go see her parents in Utah, right?
Yeah.
And she's just telling me, she's like, man, it's so beautiful out here. It's this, it's that. I'm like, remember yesterday we were talking about going camping, going up to the woods? I'm like, man, I could use a trip like that. But the parks aren't open yet. They haven't opened that up. So part of the phases that they're doing, I looked it up yesterday. None of that stuff is open yet. But it's nice no matter what right now to just kind of even get away from the home for a few hours.
Some trails are open. I saw that they released some
trails open.
Some trails. So.
But like campgrounds.
Yeah, campgrounds wouldn't be open. I'm still looking for a cabin. I want a cabin because I want to get all my best friends and then, you know, the mutual friends me and my girlfriend have and just, you know, get away from everything and just.
Have you ever camped?
I have before.
Have you ever been in a tent?
Yeah, I have. And I mean, you can kind of consider when I went to Coachella, I camped out in a tent.
Oh, no, that's camping.
I've done that before. It's definitely
you were hammered, but that's camping.
Oh, man, was I?
Yeah.
Funny story about that. I remember one of the years I went. Me and my friend Ross got pretty lit and we came back to the tent and took a nap like towards the end of the night. Right. And it was towards the end of the night, but it was still early. I would say it was probably like within 10-ish, 11-ish.
Okay. Yeah. And so still early.
So we stumbled back to the campsite. We take a nap and I just remember, you know, hearing a lot of commotion outside and I'm like, what's going on? So I, you know, unzip the thing and I pop my head out and I'm like, what the hell are you guys doing? I'm trying to sleep here. And literally everyone's like, how long have you been in there? I'm like, I've been in here. I don't know. What time is it? Me and him are trying to sleep. Everyone was like scared. They thought that me and my friend were lost somewhere because he hadn't heard from us and we were just sleeping in the tent. They never bothered looking in the tent.
Okay. That works.
That works right there.
I got a quick question for you. We talked about this a little bit earlier. Aaron Rodgers, when he was talking about Jordan Love being selected, do we have that sound or no?
I do, surprised by the Jordan Love pick.
Okay, but play that sound because that's going to lead into my first halftime.
The general reaction at first was surprise. I think like many people, you know, obviously not going to say that I was, you know, thrilled by the pick necessarily, but I understand the organization is thinking not only about the present but about the future, and I respect that. You know, I understand that their focus and their mindset, and obviously they thought that he was such a great talent that they needed to go up and get him. Like I said, generally surprised, but it's what those guys are paid to do, to put together a roster for now and for the future as well.
So Aaron Rodgers, 36 years old, under a contract for four more seasons, $134 million contract extension he signed in August of 2018. So here's a question I have for you, Jess, and we'll go kind of back and forth on this. Think about, let's do NFL first, right? Let's just kind of stay with the NFL for a second. Think about the legends, the greats that were on a team for however long, 8 years, 10 years, 12 years, 15 years, and then eventually at the end of their career, played in a different jersey. And the reason why I mention this is because I'm trying to think Aaron Rodgers. Can you imagine Aaron Rodgers, for example? I'll throw out a team. Can you imagine him in a Detroit Lions jersey? No, of course you can't, right? Can you imagine him in a Rams jersey? No, you can't. Like, you just can't think. When you think Aaron Rodgers, all you think about is him with the Green Bay Packers, obviously his one Super Bowl that he had. What's a quarterback? Think of the different quarterbacks that have ended up in different jerseys towards the end of their careers. What's a quarterback that, you know, you look back on and say, God, did he look weird in that jersey? I got a couple that come in mind.
The first one that pops in my head is the quarterback Rodgers replaced Brett Favre in a Jets uniform
and in Minnesota.
That's
how
the
weird was the Viking one.
You know what was really weird about it too is the way he wore his jersey. Because, you know, like, you know, the fashion now is kind of like, you know, a little more tight, especially with the NFL. Everything's very tight. And the sleeves on the arms, they're like kind of rolled it in the pads. I remember when I played football in high school, we would roll the sleeves in the pad. But his was always like kind of flappy and out. So it was just weird. It was like a total mid-90s vibe look. But it was just very weird. That always threw me off with his jerseys.
Okay, so this is what we know, right? We know that John Elway, just the Broncos. We know that Dan Marino, just with Miami. I don't think those guys ever went anywhere. Ben Roethlisberger's been in Pittsburgh. Aaron Rodgers been with the Packers. How weird was Joe Montana in a Chiefs jersey?
That was weird too.
I mean, that was the only thing is just, you know, obviously the red or whatever. But by far, what will be the weirdest thing is when this season starts. Hopefully, 2020 starts. And we'll see what happens with Aaron Rodgers. He may very well stay in Green Bay until he decides to retire. But what will be incredibly weird is to see Tom Brady in any other uniform other than the Patriots. We're going to obviously see it this year when he reps the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah,
how weird is that going to be?
Him and Gronk on the Bucks. Of all teams, the Bucks. Who would have thought? And that definitely is going to rank up there. Right now, the first one that came to mind was Brett Favre, but Tom Brady is going to be that.
Brett Favre is probably the best one. That's probably the best one.
Yeah, just because he was so iconic with the Packers, and now it's just
Vikings jersey. That was so weird to see him in a Vikings jersey. Okay, right. I got a couple more if you think about it. So let's go to the NBA real quick. The Jordan and Washington thing, just be eliminated from all archives. Like, they should just
get rid of that. Eliminate all that from our memories.
As if it never happened. But I got a couple more. How about Shaq when he was wearing a Boston Celtics jersey? How weird was that?
Shaq wearing anything else but a Magic, a Heat, or a Laker uniform was weird.
Even the Heat, it was like, I know he won one there, but it felt right when he was wearing the Lakers. With the Magic, you're like, look, this is where he was drafted. He did some damage. He was, with Anthony Hardaway trying to win an NBA championship. But that dynamic was all kind of weird. But the Boston one, that's the one that definitely throws me off. I'm trying to think of some other players.
The Boston one and the Phoenix Suns and the Cavs, I'm all that. That throws me all off.
He ended up everywhere.
What about Patrick Ewing on the Sonics?
Oh my God. I don't even think I remember that. When did he go there? Like 2000 what?
Let's see.
Let me look.
2001? Or I'm like looking at a list because I'm trying to remember, see if any different ones that come to mind.
Oh,
and that was one of the ones that I saw.
Gosh.
And I never even knew
that. No, that definitely looks weird. That definitely looks weird. You know what looked crazy too? I mean, how about when LeBron first came to the Lakers? How crazy was that? Remember that first game they played against Portland? And he had – it was one of John's best calls. It was when he had those two dunks in a row, two tomahawk dunks. And, you know, Ireland's going crazy, and people at Portland at the Moda Center were going crazy. LeBron, when he first started rocking a Lakers jersey, that was crazy. I remember thinking back on it, and I kept mentioning – I'm like, can you just imagine when LeBron comes out the tunnel in Boston and he's wearing the purple and gold, or when he comes out, he's at the Madison Square Garden – and, you know, Knicks fans already love watching these great players play because the ownership can't put together a good team there, so they have to rely on every other team that comes into town. Can you imagine LeBron when he comes there? I'm trying to think of what other greats, when they played towards the end of their career, you know, Kobe, if Kobe ever played in a different jersey, that just wouldn't have been look right. Weird.
What about AI in a Grizzlies jersey?
Denver? You mean Denver?
No, when he was with the Memphis Grizzlies. Iverson.
Iverson was with Memphis when?
You don't remember that? That's the last. Actually, no, because he played with the Sixers, I think, for a year. He got traded out of Denver. He played with the Memphis Grizzlies for, half a season.
I think my memory is done. My memory is done.
Wow, I'm surprised you don't remember that one.
Listen to the players that I'm so happy never rocked a different jersey, okay? Magic, Kobe, Dirk, Tim Duncan, you know, when Tony Parker went to Charlotte, that was weird.
Another one. Yeah,
that's another
that
one.
That totally didn't make sense. Like, yeah, you just see that. You're just like, what are you doing, Parker? Stop fooling around.
That's another one that throws you off a little bit. But okay, those are some of the greats. Look, do I feel like Aaron Rodgers is going anywhere anytime soon? But he was, he did admit that he was surprised that the Packers took Jordan Love with that number 26 pick. Okay, what do you got?
Yeah, and he also doesn't really see he's not realistically thinking that he's going to be able to finish his career with the Packers. But we'll see. You know, you never know.
We'll see what happens. I mean, listen, when I was doing the show with Kirk on that night, I told Kirk, I'm like, Kirk, help me understand this.
Pregúntale a Kirk.
Here is a position where the Packers are trying to win right now. You're using your number, your first-round pick on a quarterback, and you have Aaron Rodgers. Explain that one to me. We're both kind of thrown off by it, so I'm sure it's fair that Aaron Rodgers was thrown off by it as well.
It's funny. I remember kind of reading into it. The Packers, I think, I remember reading that they were kind of panicked because I think the pick before that, they were targeting a receiver, which was Brandon Ayuk, I think, was the 49ers selected the receiver, and they were looking at him. But the Niners, they jumped on because they knew that the Packers would have selected him before. So that definitely could have been a panic, like, the player we wanted to choose got chosen. They maybe didn't have a backup plan or whatever. But, I mean, the last time they chose a quarterback in the first round, it turned out okay for them. So maybe they're just hoping to catch lightning in a bottle twice.
No, and listen, we'll see how things play out. The only thing that I just say is typically, right? When you're in win mode now, those picks are so important to try and win right now. So you're not thinking 3-4 years down the road. But we'll see what happens. We'll see what ends up happening with the Packers. Definitely. What do you got over there?
So you played a clip earlier from BJ Armstrong with Mackenzie Salmon. And I found another clip with him where she asked him how would he end the Last Dance documentary, as the last two episodes are going to air this weekend. And this is what he said, how he would end the documentary.
I would ask him the question, you know, why? Like, just why did you play? Why did the game of basketball mean this much to you? Why, when you achieved everything individually you could do, you achieved everything you could do team-wise, why did it matter? You know, why were you living your life at these extremes, right? So you see, he's so competitive. But then you can see the sensitivity to the side where he would just break down. So why? And I think you're beginning to see that he loved it. That's who he was. And I would just let him say what he wanted to say, you know, like, but what kept him that focused to where he had this ultimate respect for the game of basketball? He never cheated the game. It wasn't clearly about the fame. It wasn't clearly about the recognition of saying he's the GOAT. So that clearly wasn't out, or who's the best player. It wasn't about any of that. It was just about, you saw someone that dedicated their life to their craft.
That's I've never heard that before. That's a perfect way to put it from BJ Armstrong, of like all those whys. It's a great question. I mean, Jess, there's nothing I'm going to come with that is going to end the documentary better than the way I think he just framed it. But those are fair questions. Like, that is a great, why was he so driven? You know, after you accomplish, we were talking about this with Ramona. Think about this. Typically, the way these dynasties go down, the way corporations eventually fold, it's from within, you know, and a lot of times it might have to do with ego. Jerry Krause, you could use that as, you know, one example, that he wanted to get more credit for putting together that championship roster and that championship team. That's just one example. There's, I'm sure, so many different examples on there as well. Pippen thought he was underpaid, which he was. Phil Jackson or Michael Jordan say, I'm not going to come back unless Phil Jackson comes back. So everybody had their reasons for, you know, I guess you could say why it ended. But I do wonder what drove him to dedicate his life to that level. What drove Kobe to dedicate his life to that level? That's usually one of the best questions that you could ask. What's your why? Why are you doing what you're doing? I don't know if you could top a better way of kind of closing that out, because as much as we've seen behind the scenes and kind of inside the head of Michael Jordan, and it's been a fantastic thing to see, he always felt like he had a chip on his shoulder, right? Like, there was always something that pushed him and that drove him, but I don't know if we always had that clear answer of what that was.
No, I don't think we did, and that would be a great way to end the documentary. I don't know if it's going to happen like that. But, you know, I for the most part, I think there was something about the game of basketball that just spoke to him, and he just.
But he was so competitive in everything, right? Like, he was, you know how they go to some different shots of him, and let's say it's golf. Let's say it's what was he playing, that quarter game or whatever that was, where he's throwing the quarter up against the wall. Pool. He was just so competitive in everything. Why? Like, I would take myself as very competitive as well, but I'm very selective. If I'm not going to,
because you definitely can exert a lot of energy being as competitive as Michael Jordan was at everything.
But just think about this. Like, for me personally, right? There's certain things that I don't care that much about. So it's not, unless somebody's talking, right? Sometimes that motivates you. Somebody's running their mouth, but for the most part, okay. It's not that big of a deal if it's something small thing or whatever the case is. That wasn't Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, you wanted to win at everything. I think there's actually a lot of similarities between some of these athletes. They have traits like this. And then even others who have success, it's like they feel if they lose in anything, or they're okay with losing on anything, and it doesn't matter what it is, it can trickle to everything else. So then they just try to win in everything they do, forever, how small it is or how big it is.
No, definitely. For me, I would want the documentary, or at least maybe something I think would be really cool is, you know, even in like the end credits. So, you know how sometimes I have like a side video or whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
If they somehow show Jordan playing basketball right now and still showing that he has it, because I mean, well, how long ago was it where he basically showed up his entire Hornets team? Was it like a year or two ago?
I don't know how long ago it was. It probably a little bit longer than that, but I know what you're talking about.
How badass would it be if there was like just a 30-second clip of him playing one-on-one with whether it's a player or someone random, and you know he just goes in for the dunk like he's still, you know, 20 years old. I think that'd be the most Jordan thing ever. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like, oh, you want to play a little one-on-one? All right, let's go. And, you know, boom,
probably,
boom, boom.
He's probably not going to dunk on anyone. But what he will do is give him a little shimmy shake and then a fadeaway from 18 feet away. But, man, Jordan was honestly just incredible. Just an incredible, incredible player, incredible athlete. And the fact that, you know, 20-plus years after how many ever years it's been since he, you know, obviously retired from the Chicago Bulls, I love that everyone now gets a chance to go back and appreciate him, to see him again. It's similar when they do stuff on Muhammad Ali or they do stuff on other greats. It's like it's great to go back and look at them and appreciate them because we got one of a kind, you know, each generation only gets these greats so few times. So to go back and kind of relive that is important.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And I'm excited because Ramona said that this weekend there is wrestling involved in one of the episodes with Dennis Rodman when he teamed up with Hulk Hogan in WCW and he joined NWO. Ooh, I'm excited for that.
In the middle of that. Jess, great stuff, bud. Thank you, all right?
Yes, sir.
All right, it's UFC Fight Night, Overeem versus Harris, live on ESPN this Saturday, starting at 3 p.m. Pacific time, so make sure to tune into that. Coming up next, I've had questions about this, and I talked a little bit about it yesterday. I'm confused on college football. I am. And I don't know for what happened yesterday with Cal State, all these CSU schools, in a sense, closing down, I guess, for the time being. Not closing down, but they're going into everything's going to be online for the fall. I want to see how this affects college football. Billy Witz from the New York Times will explain everything. He's got an article right now, classroom shutdown at the Cal State College, but football may take the field. And then LZ Granderson coming up at 8:30. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Billy Witz from the New York Times, classroom shutdown at Cal State College, but football may take the field. Billy, first of all, thank you for taking the time and joining the show.
Yeah, my pleasure, Alan.
You know, it's interesting because I was telling my producer yesterday, we were talking about this, and I feel like I'm confused, incredibly confused when it comes to college football. And maybe part of that just has to do with it's still early enough in the process. There's still so many more questions than answers right now when it comes to college football and what's going to happen in each of these schools. And then I read your article today and I was like, all right, perfect. Maybe you can kind of come in and help us understand what's going on in the college football world. Can you just, for listeners out there, just give us the latest of what's happening right now in college football? And as best as you can educate us would be great.
Right. So I think for about a month or so now, I think the thinking is that amongst athletic directors, conference commissioners, and people in the college sports realm was that for football to go off on schedule this fall, so meaning, you know, pretty much Labor Day weekend, mm-hmm. then that students the players had to be on campus by maybe like the second, third week of July. Mm-hmm. So backing that up, there's a sense that they need that administrators need about another 4 weeks to kind of put all the protocols in place because it's going to be different. It's not just, show up at training camp, have buffet sure. meals, workouts, mm-hmm. Training. I mean, there's going to be some different measures if it does take place. So kind of the target date for decisions were about a month from now, the middle of June. And I think that really kind of changed this week when the Cal State schools, the chancellor of the Cal State system said, you know what, there's going to be some very narrow exceptions, but classes in the fall are going to be online. Mm-hmm. And the reason that that's significant is that pretty much everybody from Mark Emmert down, his athletic directors, you know, in the last few weeks or really month, have kind of indicated that if there's no students in the class, then there won't be any players on the field. And that's what the College Football Playoff Committee, which is basically made up of conference commissioners, from 10 conferences, and then the Notre Dame athletic director, they have the same message for Mike Pence when they met over the phone with him about three weeks ago.
Sure.
And so that was kind of like I think it was pretty clear to everybody, okay, this is what, you know, how it's going to play out. It's, it's pretty simple. If there's students in the classroom, then we can think about having players on the field. And so that's why it was very significant the other day when the Cal State chancellor said that there won't be students in the classroom with you know, unless there's, you know, with very few exceptions in the fall.
Just to run on that, NCAA President Mark Emmert emphasized last week, this was in your article, if a school doesn't reopen, then they're not going to be playing sports. It's really that simple. It doesn't, by the way, sound like it's that simple. And of course, out here in Los Angeles, just use Los Angeles as an example. You know, I know there's a lot of curiosity about the Pac-12. I know there's a lot of curiosity about USC, UCLA, and these CSU schools, the system, the CSU system. What does that mean for, have they said much, and these are the football programs as part of the CSU system, Fresno State, San Diego State University, and San Diego or San Jose State. Where do those schools stand? Have they, has there been anybody that's talked based upon what Mark Emmert had said that has tried to kind of clear up whether there will be athletics or that has not been determined yet for those three schools?
Yeah, they're clearly making moves to try to play. Now, whether they will ultimately or not, they're still planning on playing. So, you know, that's a very different, you know, that's a very different message than what Mark Emmert said, that Timothy White, the CSU chancellor, said. You know, so, you know, the bottom line here is what seemed very clear at the beginning of the week, no students in the classroom, no, you know, no football, is, you know, everybody's kind of, or the people at those three schools are saying, well, not so fast. We're going to, you know, we're going to look at that. So I guess I'll leave it right there, is that that's where things kind of stand. And as you mentioned with, say, USC and UCLA, those are other dominoes to, you know, that
yet to fall,
that will fall. So the UC system, so that would involve Cal and UCLA as far as, you know, football purposes are concerned. Their board of trustees are going to meet next week, and it's a little bit different. You know, a lot of times they're going to be in lockstep, the UC and the CSU systems. However, you know, the case could be made that, you know, just like community colleges have gone to online only because they're commuter schools, the same for the most part with CSU. Well, it's not quite that way at the UC systems, you know, certainly not UCLA and Berkeley. So there may be some, you know, wiggle room there. And then USC as a private school, you know, can basically do whatever they want.
Billy Witz of the New York Times joining the Sliwa Show. Classroom shut down at Cal State College, but football may take the field. Has Larry Scott, who's the commissioner of the Pac-12, has he said anything about the Pac-12 specifically in the conference?
No, not of what they're going to do, but he's what he has acknowledged is that decisions need to be made, you know, soon. It's coming, sure. You know, you know, it's getting crunch time. And, well, first off, these decisions aren't being made in athletic departments or amongst conference commissioners. I mean, they can have some, you know, influence and lobby, but these are going to be made at the top by presidents, by board of trustees. And, you know, they're going to be reading what governors have to say, what local politicians and, you know, public health officials have to say about, you know, what needs to be done. And so that's where the decisions, you know, ultimately are going to be made on this.
Yeah, and it sounds like, too, Billy, might be just one of those things where it's just too early, right? And maybe over the next 2 weeks, maybe over the next month, we'll get a lot more answers when it comes to college football. But I appreciate you doing this. It's a great read, and I think it offers some insight of what's going on in the college football world. And then also, you know, I know from a local perspective, we're all kind of waiting to see what does happen, because I think there's curiosity of what will happen to the USC's, the UCLA's. I mentioned San Diego State University, some of these teams that are in Southern California. So thank you for doing this, and I greatly appreciate your time.
Yeah, my pleasure, Alan. Thanks for having me.
All right, now we have a little bit more understanding from a college football perspective. Excuse me there. One of our main guys, Elsie Granderson, reading the LA Times this morning, and there's article that comes out, The First Dance, The Night Magic Launched the Showtime Dynasty. This is referring specifically to one game that I think set the Los Angeles Lakers under Dr. Jerry Buss into a completely different realm that started Showtime. We come back, we'll talk about that with LZ. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, appreciate you guys tuning in. I want to welcome in LZ Granderson. The First Dance, the night Magic launched the Showtime Dynasty. We'll have him actually here in just a second. So I got a chance to read this morning, and this is, we know Los Angeles, and we know how big the Showtime era was for, by the way, not just for Los Angeles, but just sports in general. And for me, I was born in 1982. So when that Showtime era started in 1980, when Magic was drafted by the Lakers in 1979, and Dr. Jerry Buss originally bought the Los Angeles Lakers, it started something that, you know, we'll never forget. Arguably one of the best eras of basketball in the history of the NBA. And looks like, to me personally, you know, that Showtime era, Magic's my favorite player of all time. LZ, want to welcome in LZ Granderson to the show. What's going on, LZ? How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, my friend. How are you?
You know, I'm good. I'm good. Before I just jump into this and we go into 1980 and we hop into game six of the NBA Finals, first of all, great article. And I loved, just kind of, you know, for me, I was just mentioning to the listeners that I wasn't even born then, but I can't tell you how much I loved Magic Johnson growing up. And I would always go back and try and watch as much footage of Magic as possible. So before I go back to that specific game and to that time, how are things going with the show? It's funny, LZ. You know, you're doing your thing in the morning. Obviously, I'm doing I'm handling stuff in the evenings. We never even get to cross paths, you and I. We never get to cross paths.
You know, this is the new normal. You know, it's you know, I know everyone wants to wonder. They want to know when we can go back to the way things used to be, and I don't think we ever will. You know, when you scan, you know, the history just in this country alone, let alone global history, there are very few examples in which you have something of this magnitude impact society. And then on the opposite side of it, we return back to what we once were. We adjust. We change. You know, in a lot of cases, we end up getting better and smarter and more efficient. And so, you know, I understand the sense of distress and confusion right now, but I also know, you know, as a student of history, that when we come out on the other side, more you know, times than not, we're better for it. So I'm looking forward for those better days, if you will. And I'm assuming those better days would include you and I crossing paths once again and maybe having better coffee in the office.
That's what I'm talking about. The better coffee, I don't know about. That, I think, is always – that one's always a fair question. No, but, I mean, listen, it's a good perspective to have. And I think a lot of people, right, however their lives have changed over the last 8 weeks – these are maybe they sound like small things. What I mean by that is just kind of going back to our regular routine, but that's typically what makes things feel normal again. And, you know, from the sports side of it, we'll just continue to do what we're doing. And then hopefully we get some sports back as well to kind of help with that normalcy. So I read your article this morning, and for those who haven't got a chance, LA Times, The First Dance, the night Magic launched the Showtime Dynasty. So can you do me a favor? Take us back to 1980 NBA Finals. Lakers are up 3-2, and they're flying back to Philly. If I'm correct on this, Dr. Jerry Buss tells his daughter Jeannie Buss not to bother flying back to Philly. Why is that?
Well, because Kareem had injured his ankle in the second half of game five. And even though he was able to come back in the fourth quarter and contribute, team physicians ruled that he wouldn't be able to play in game six. So the decision was for him to stay back in LA, get treatment, certainly not, you know, fly and risk, you know, having, you know, further damage to his ankle and be prepared for a game seven. And for those who aren't old enough to remember, in 1980, Kareem was named the NBA's MVP. Mm-hmm. So, needless to say, he was vital in terms of the importance to the team's success. And so, Dr. Buss told his daughter to stay there when she was 18, stay home, because the assumption was if your team doesn't have not just his best player, but someone who at that time had been viewed as perhaps the game's best player ever, wouldn't be available to play in this game six against Dr. J, Mo Cheeks, and the Philadelphia 76ers in Philadelphia, then we just need to be all hands on deck for game seven back in the Forum. And so that's why Dr. Buss told Jeannie, you know, not to travel with the team. But it wasn't just about Dr. Buss. A number of players didn't have their loved ones travel.
Mm-hmm.
And talking to Coach Westhead, he mentioned that, you know, a lot of journalists didn't bother traveling, you know, just staying in New York and just getting ready for game seven. So mm-hmm. by far and large, the conventional wisdom was no Kareem for the Lakers. They're going to Philadelphia. Dr. J and Mo Cheeks are waiting for them. They're not winning this game.
They don't have a chance. LZ Granderson joining the Sliwa Show. Okay. How does Magic approach the team as they get to the airport? What's his mentality, and what are some specifics that he does that I know are in your article, in your piece, that you could share with the audience?
Well, you know, the first thing about, you know, one of the first things I need to talk about is that, you know, I'm from Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Magic is from East Lansing, so we're not very far from each other. Magic and I spent a great deal of time talking just about that game, but also just about what it was like being either a basketball player or someone who was a basketball fan at that time in Michigan. So it was such a treat just to sort of reminisce on, you know, Magic winning the championship at Michigan State, being drafted by the Lakers, being in L.A., and many people who are fans of his following that. And so it was just awesome for me to be able to talk to him and relive that experience. And the reason why I bring that up is because as we were talking about, you know, what it was like to be on that plane, a lot of it just kind of made sense based upon the things we had already known about Magic being from Michigan. Mm. And, you know, one of the first things he did once he saw that the guys, the other players on the team felt as if, you know, they were just going to go to be slaughtered for game six. You know, he's recognized that very quickly. And the first thing he did was sit in Kareem's normal seat on flights out for trips that were on, you know, road trips for the season.
Mm-hmm.
And he sat there, and as the guys came on the plane, he just sort of said, "Never fear, Magic is here,"
mm-hmm.
which was really, really kind of, you know, funny sort of twist of phrase, obviously, but also like incredibly ballsy. Because Magic was 20 when he said
unbelievable.
That.
By the way, unbelievable. 20. Think about that, okay. LZ. Like I was going to say unbelievable, right? Because when we try to take a 20-year-old today and put them in that predicament, in that situation, and their MVP is out for game six of the NBA Finals, it's unreal. And I love how you're kind of walking through this because I think for those that maybe they watched the game or they don't remember the game or they weren't even born at that time, this is a great story to tell.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite remarkable. You know, today we're kind of accustomed to the notion of one and done, but even with the backdrop of one and done basketball players in the league, one and done basketball players are not they're not in position to be sitting in the front part of the airplane and telling veterans, "Never fear, I'm here," in the biggest game of the season. Like, that's not what happens. And so here you have this 20-year-old Magic Johnson, who's not from L.A., who wasn't Rookie of the Year, that went to Larry Bird, who wasn't necessarily a big-time scorer. He averaged less than 20 points in his first year. Arguably the greatest player of all time is not there. And when he did play, he was the reason why they were in the lead to begin with, because he was dominating the 76ers. They have all of this confusion, all of this despair. And this kid, basically, listening to Frankie Beverly and Baze, you know, in the front of the plane, saying, "Don't worry, guys, we got this." It was absolutely an incredible sort of display of leadership and confidence that oftentimes get lost when we talk about Magic Johnson's career, because we typically focus in on, you know, sort of like the mid-80s. But
sure,
this whole dynasty got started on the, you know, on the backs of a kid stepping in the place of the greatest player of all time and saying, "I got this, we got this, don't worry about it."
So Magic's 20 years old. He's going to Philly up 3-2. Kareem is out. He's going up against Mo Cheeks, Julius Erving, Daryl Dawkins, Lionel Hollins is on that team, Steve Mix, Henry Bibby. You can kind of go down the list of these just incredibly talented basketball players, and it's in Philly. How does Magic do in that game?
Well, I mean, the rest is, you know, basically history. He's the one that jumps the ball at center, which was a big thing today. We don't think of that as a big deal. But back then, they were very much locked into their positions.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were a center, centers jumped. If you were a point guard, you were supposed to be of a certain height and a certain skill set. And you didn't really navigate too far from that. At most, you went to, you know, shooting guard, but you certainly didn't play small forward or power forward. Magic played all five positions.
Jesus.
And he jumped center. And, you know, it's absolutely remarkable what he accomplished 40 years ago yesterday and what the team accomplished to kick off the dynasty.
Hmm.
And he just had an incredible game, 42-15 in Southern. But more importantly, before the ball was even dribbled, he was a key component in terms of giving the team belief.
Sure.
They could do this.
Yeah, 42. I'm looking at the box score as if the game was yesterday, LZ. Just 42-15-7 with 3 steals. 14 of 14 from the free throw line. 14 of 23 from the field. And he's 20 years old. What the hell? Played 47 minutes, by the way. Yeah, just a regular afternoon. Just a regular afternoon.
I really The only thing I can think of that's remotely close to that, in my opinion, is when LeBron scored, like, I believe it was like 28 of the final 30 points.
Against Detroit?
Against Detroit, exactly, when he was 22 years old. Now, it was in the finals, obviously, and he was a little bit older, but the team was far inferior in compared to what Magic was working with. I mean, he had an MVP on the team, and so LeBron at 22 was the de facto leader of that team, and the Pistons had just won a championship maybe like a, you know, they were just in the finals the year before and won a championship 2 years prior to that. So that's the closest thing I can think of in terms of someone that young being in a position to lead veterans in, you know, what's considered to be, you know, a very important stage of the NBA season, the postseason.
One of the most, I think, iconic performances in, you know, any championship game, and let alone for it to be done by a rookie at age 20 under the circumstances, no Kareem on the road, like you set it up too. Everybody just assuming, journalists saying, we're not going to fly out to Philly. We'll just wait till we'll wait for the next game. Just under all those circumstances, I love what, you know, you had included in the piece as well, where, one of the main points Magic had to the team was all the pressure is on them. We got no pressure on us. They know they have to win this game. We don't. We got another one back at home.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a number of the players that I spoke to, you know, brought that up to me. And, you know, it, any time that you feel as if, you know, you quote-unquote have nothing to lose, you're a loser. You know, your shoulders are more open. You don't have T-Rex arms at the free throw line. You're more confident. I'm sure if it was game 7 on the road, you know, perhaps their level of confidence would have been different.
Sure.
But when you have the extra game in the hip pocket, yeah, it makes things a little bit easier for you in terms of shooting. And, of course, for the opposite team, for your opponent, they're a great deal tighter.
And they're just assuming, too, well, they don't have Kareem, so they're just going to fold when they come here. And we see that in sports, right? That's when you're most dangerous, is when it's like that. By the way, let's not forget Jamal Wilkes' performance. Silk had
37 and 10. Yeah. Silk balled the hell out. And it's unfortunate, you know, that, you know, some people don't remember that part of the game because Magic, you know, was the narrative, and his game was so incredible.
Sure.
Know, because he was a rookie, and Silk had already won a chip in Golden State by the time that game happened. But that 37-10, particularly in the second half when they outscored the 76ers by 16, it was really Silk's offense that really padded them like that. You know, he didn't score very many points in the first half. It was the second half where he kind of went off, and it was the second half in which the Lakers, because of the tie game, score was 61 all at halftime. It was the second half where the Lakers pulled away, and that coincided with Jamal Wilkes scoring.
What was, LZ, what was the parade like? Because you had a piece in there and even some photos. What was that? What was the parade like to kind of start the Showtime era?
Well, it was a lot like the way we used to coronate the President of the United States, you know, where almost anyone can just kind of walk into the White House, you know, walk in with very little security and just speak directly to top officials of the country. When it comes to the parade, I mean, there are pictures in which people are just walking right up to Magic. And I'm not saying Magic's the president, but my gosh, can you imagine people just walking up to LeBron James in a championship parade like that? But Magic was basically in a convertible driving down the street in downtown L.A. heading to City Hall, and fans would just kind of walk up and take pictures and shake his hand and the whole nine, and with very little security stopped them from doing so. And I was trying to figure out, I was talking to a buddy of mine, I couldn't remember if this was pre or post John Lennon, but I think he was pre-John Lennon, because after that, it was certainly pre-Reagan being shot. So this is the point in the country's history where we weren't really necessarily greeted with, you know, these sort of environments ending in tragedy with hyper-sensitive fans being able to be so up close with their icons or with people of note. This is prior to all of that. So they're just walking right up to Magic and like, hey, good game, dog. And it was just kind of like crazy looking at those photos.
Well, LZ, it's a great piece, and it's great to kind of go back down memory lane. And also, you know, there's so much time spent on The Last Dance, right? And to have this be a conversation, and I know for a lot of Laker fans out there, I'm sure they appreciate the story. So thank you for doing this, my man. I appreciate you doing this, you know, obviously in the evening as well. So thank you, LZ.
Hey, thanks, man, so much. You know, as a writer, you know, I got to give a shout-out to my boy Chris Stone for guiding me through this, and then the Lakers and Magic and Lon Rosen, some of the people were so helpful in helping to retell the story. I thought it was cool, to your point, that on the weekend that we're looking at Michael Jordan's docuseries, and this is the last weekend of The Last Dance, that it just happened to coincide with Magic Johnson and the LA Lakers' first dance, if you will.
I love it. I love it, LZ. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, brother.
All right, man. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All right, that's LZ Granderson right there. I want to actually come back to this, because I do want to talk a little bit about that specific game. And I remember as a kid going back and buying this this cassette. Yes, a cassette that was on Magic Johnson. And I can't tell you how much I watched that damn thing. Yeah, I know, Jess. But we'll talk about that when we come back. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. So LZ, you know, obviously every morning, Monday through Friday, they're doing the show 6 to 10 a.m. So nice of him to wait all the way in the evening and to do this with me. But I love that story being told. I love that story being told. So let me, I can kind of go back. I remember, I don't know how many years it was. Maybe I was 12 years old, 13 years old, something along those lines. I remember my mom giving me a $20 bill. Think about $20 is a lot of money, right? Give me a $20 bill. We were at the mall or something along those lines. It might have been 10 bucks. Maybe it wasn't even 20. It's like 10 bucks. She's like, look, you could go buy something with this. And I bought, and Jesse, you may clown on buying a cassette, right? But that's what it was. It was a VCR. I bought literally a Magic Johnson.
When you said cassette, I thought you meant like a tape cassette, like music, but a VHS?
No.
Oh, wow.
Like a VHS, yeah. Bought a VHS. So I buy this. I'm at the mall, and I buy this Magic Johnson. You know, and I remember even showing my mom. She's like, okay, well, what'd you spend your money on? I'm like, I bought this. And it's a Magic Johnson, basically like a highlight reel of his career and also his story and everything else. My mom looked at me like, what is my son doing? What is he doing with his money? And one of the things that I remember so vividly is they spent so much time on that series against the Philadelphia 76ers. They should. If you're writing a piece on Magic Johnson, and here's a 20-year-old that comes into the league, and in the NBA Finals with, you saw yesterday, Michael Thompson put Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as the number one player, the greatest player of all time in the history of the NBA. He put Kareem first and Jordan second. Here is Magic Johnson going up against Dr. J and Maurice Cheeks and Daryl Dawkins going up against you know, these great players in the league at age 20, taking the Lakers in game six, suiting up at center, 42-15-7, 14-14 from the free throw line, 14-23 from the field, along with three steals. Jamal Wilk was the man too, the Silk, right? With his, I think he said 37-10 was what LZ said. But how can you compare another performance like that? I mean, if you just think about all the young players that are out there and we get a chance to watch, whether right now you're looking at the NFL and you're like, man, Lamar Jackson is an absolute stud. Or you're talking about Patrick Mahomes, obviously winning a Super Bowl at age 24. As a rookie, this is what Magic Johnson was doing. It's special. You know, honestly, it's special. And what I didn't realize is yesterday was the anniversary of that. And I love the way LZ, LZ explained that if you look at specifically the first dance or the last dance coming up this weekend, and this was the first dance of the Lakers dynasty, that's a perfect way to explain it. There's no better way to explain it than explaining it that way. So I appreciate LZ doing that, and I have no idea how we can compare what Magic accomplished in his rookie year with another player. He gave the example, and I remember right when he started talking about LeBron James, and he's like, you know, I remember the closest thing I could think of is LeBron at age 22. And right when he said that, I'm like, oh, this is Detroit Pistons in the playoffs. LeBron was in Detroit, scored 28 points in a row, and was just unstoppable. And who was he doing it against? He was doing it against Chauncey and Rip Hamilton and Tayshaun Prince and Ben Wallace. It was the Pistons. It was the Pistons team.
And who were known for their defense.
Known for their defense. And this is who the Lakers lost to with, you know, Shaq and with Karl Malone and Gary Payton and Kobe. So it was this team that was just incredible. And LeBron was doing it against that team and having those 28 straight points and winning that big game. But it wasn't the finals. And it wasn't game six of the finals. And it wasn't his rookie year. And it wasn't walking into the road or going on the road without, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So the circumstances were completely different. I like looking back at some of those games. We should do, you know, Jess, this actually be a great idea. We should find a old Laker game that just kind of stands out and just kind of reflect back on it. Let Laker fans reflect back on it. I know there's some great ones, so we'll try and keep that in mind and do that for an upcoming show. Okay, as always, appreciate you guys listening in. I know it's another full week here. If you guys miss any part of the show, you can always download the show on the Lakers Talk podcast, which is on the ESPN app or on iTunes. Monday, back with Lakers Talk. So we'll get that show back and rolling. And then tomorrow, the Weekend Warriors show with Dr. Clapper. So make sure to tune into that. LA, as always, greatly appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll see you again on Monday. Have a great weekend.